And I said, but over 21, I mean, why, what do you mean you still can't get it? So she showed me her birth certificate, and Lily, it said she was born in a different city. She was born in a different hospital, and that the couple that had adopted her were listed on there as if they had given birth to her. I couldn't believe it.
Hello, you are listening to NPE Stories. This is a podcast where NPEs can share their story. I am your host, Lily, and I found out I was an NPE through an ancestry DNA test that changed my life forever. NPE is a term that stands for not parent expected or non-paternal event. This means that one or more of our parents are not who we believe them to be. NPE Stories is a podcast where NPEs can share their story of what their original family was like, how they found out they were an NPE, and what their journey has been like since the day they found out. And welcome to episode 175. And today I am speaking with Marcy Keithley. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Lily.
I haven't spoken with you in about a month or two. This is nice to be doing this again.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
And this is the NPE Stories podcast, but we have within the NPE community a lot of overlap with the adoption community. And that's why we decided to do this today, because how would you say this, the founder of NAP?
I'm the co-founder and executive leader of NAP.
And what is NAP?
NAP is the National Association of Adoptees and Parents. We were formerly Indiana Adoptee Network, and over the years, we just outgrew our name and decided to change it, and we wanted to make it all-inclusive for the entire constellation.
You're not in Indiana, are you? Aren't you in Kentucky?
I'm in Indiana. I'm what they call a river rat. I'm on the Ohio River on the border of Indiana and Kentucky. They call it Kentuckiana down here.
Oh, yes. You explained that to me because we...
Yes.
Yes. You hosted the summit last year with Right to Know. I've spoken a lot about it on the podcast.
Correct. Yeah. Our organization joined up with Right to Know, and we collaborated together to hold a successful first ever Untangling Our Roots Summit in March of 2023 in Louisville. It was amazing.
It was. I was actually a speaker on a panel that weekend.
That's right. That's right. You were. That's where we met.
And you have had me on your happy hour, which I thought we should put a little plug in for that as well. Are you still hosting your happy hour every week?
We changed our schedule a little bit. For the first 3 years, we were doing every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for 3 years, excluding holidays. And we finally decided to go ahead and make it the first and the third Fridays of each month. So yeah, I'm still hosting that.
I will put in a link into that, not only NAP, but the link for happy hour. Should I direct them to the Facebook page or the website?
The website, please.
Website. And what do you do at happy hour on your first and third Fridays?
Yeah, it's really cool, because if I may just take a step back and kind of tell you how we ended up with a happy hour, because that in itself is just a cool story, if I may.
Of course.
So in 2020, NAP hosts an annual conference in Indianapolis each year. For the last 5 years, we've done that. And in 2020, we were ready to go. And then COVID hit. And when COVID hit, obviously there was a lot of chaos, a lot of, people were in reunion, they were getting ready to do reunion, people had all kinds of questions, and they were ready to come to Indianapolis and be with their peeps. You know, we do this once a year, and we had, workshops set up, keynotes, I mean, the whole thing. Well, anyway, we were concerned about it. And I kept saying, we've got to figure out a way to keep our community connected through this crisis that this health crisis that none of us knew what was going to happen. And so I called on a few of my loyal friends that I'd met throughout the years in the adoption community and said, this is my idea. I was thinking that maybe we could just do a Zoom call on a Friday night and just see where everybody is at. Does anybody need some support? Your anxiety level. Are you in a reunion? Are you having issues? What's going on? Or do you need assistance with search? And why we can't come together in Indianapolis? What can we do for you? You know, something like that. So we thought we would just get together, just a couple of us on a Friday night. And they came up with the name. I didn't come up with the adoption happy hour. They came up with the name, but I came up with the idea of just getting us together. So it was kind of like just a thought. And so we got together on one Friday night and talked about Lysol and COVID and toilet paper, and it just went from there. And some of the people, you know, initially, some of the adoptees were sharing their story on that first evening. And so we decided, you know, we had 22 people show up, and we thought, oh, wow. And so we did it again. And then we had 10 more people show up. And then I got to thinking, well, you know what? We could just interview all kinds of people. We could have people come on and share their stories. We could have authors. We could have podcasters, bloggers. We've done Chai Chi, yoga. We've watched a movie together. We've had, you know, music. We've done it all. So it just went from there, and it just morphed. And then the next thing I know, I've got 125 people. We've got an international following, and it became our signature program. So that's what we do on Friday nights. We're looking to elevate, you know, our mission. Our mission statement is to unify the adoption community and elevate our diverse voices by promoting dialogue, understanding, and healing through education, awareness, and connections. So we want to hear those voices out in the community. What is your story? What type of work are you doing in the adoption community? And just went from there. And that's what we do on Friday nights.
I love it. I was on, you had me on happy hour, I think in August. Mm-hmm. And it was such a nice way, even, you know, via Zoom, to just spend some time with people in the community, because the NPE community, the misattributed parentage community, mm-hmm. and the adoption community have so much overlap. I've heard you talk about that. And I'm starting to learn more about the terms you use. So correct me if I use the wrong terms. I heard you say you were talking about during happy hour, you spoke about some people were in reunion.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can guess what that means. Is that where the adoptees meet with their biological parents? Is that what that means?
Yes. It could be the adoptee searched for a birth parent, or the birth parent searched for the adoptee, or an extended member of the family.
Yep.
Like a sibling is looking for a sibling. I mean, it could be anywhere in reunion.
Yep.
That's what we call it, in reunion.
I wonder if we can use that term kind of as NPEs as well, when we start to connect with our biological parents. Usually it's the paternal side, and we start to make those connections. We're kind of like in a, well, I guess it's not a reunion because we've never met them, but we have so many terms
we do have so many terms. Oh, this is true.
And speaking of that, I believe do you call yourself a, correct me again, is it first mother, raising mother? No. You are the birth mother?
I go by first mother. Yes. And a lot of moms will say birth mother, first mother, natural mother, biological mother. To me, there's no right or wrong. It's whatever I choose, my daughter choose, how we label one another, what we you know, it's
yeah.
Yep. I know I've been in arguments about that. It's like, I argue about it. There is no one term. It's what's right for us.
And you are a first mother, so I would love to hear your story and how you came to be where you are today. So why don't you explain to me, just tell me your story.
Okay, I'd be happy to. Thank you. My story began, actually, what started the whole thing off for me was rediscovering a shoebox in my closet in the fall of 2007. And that shoebox contained some painful memories of the day I came home from the hospital with no baby. I was a mom, a young mom, a young girl, scared and alone. And it was my first love. And he abandoned, when I found out I was pregnant, the father abandoned me in the late 70s when it was not cool to be pregnant and unwed. Mm-hmm. And my doctor, my own doctor, solicited me for adoption through gaslighting and the soft coercion. Over time, he would make little comments to me about, is the nursery ready? And when are you getting married? And he knew what was happening with me. And eventually he broke me down. So my baby was surrendered through my own personal physician. And fast forward 30 years, when I find my shoebox and I open it up to go back into the past and find out what happened, that's where the whole story really kicked in, was the fall of 2007. So I opened that shoebox and I decide that I wanted, I wasn't that scared, resourceless girl with a broken heart. I was a grown woman, an educated woman, and I was resourceful, and I wanted to find out what happened to my daughter. So I opened the shoebox. I realized that in my own mind, whether it was right or wrong, I didn't know where to start. I was not connected to the adoption community. I didn't know about reunions. I didn't know anything. I was just a hurting mom in search of answers and wanted to know that my baby, now a grown woman, was okay. And I just started to search on the computer. I remember the day that I typed in adoption search, and I was terrified, just hitting the strokes of the key. Like, was I doing something wrong? Because back then, we were conditioned to be compliant women. We were told to pretend it never happened. We would go on and have children. And we were making this brave decision and giving a couple an amazing gift, and that my child would be taken care of and would have this privileged life. And again, just pretend like it just never happened. And so I did that. So the idea of just placing my fingers on a keyboard and typing those words in felt like, I don't know, was an alarm going to go off? Was somebody, the adoption police, knock on my door and say, what are you doing? I mean, I was that terrified that I was doing something that I shouldn't be doing. But in the interim, I found the birth father by accident, and he and I started to see each other. And about four or five months later, we got married. It was kind of a little bit crazy. And we went on a search for our daughter, and we found her on Father's Day, 2008. Hmm. So she comes to live with us, and I find the truth. And the truth was, again, how my doctor, I found out that my doctor sold her to a couple he went to college with, who were never vetted and probably should not have been parents, parented a child. And they divorced when my daughter was three. She was raised by the adoptive mother, and in reunion, when I found her, she was living with the adoptive mother, and she had had five children by five different fathers. They were struggling financially on welfare. It was heartbreaking. And in talking and speaking with her, she said she'd been looking for me for 10 years. I said, I don't understand. I mean, I've been right here. I mean, what's the problem? And she kept on, well, the records are sealed. And she said, my fake birth certificate says, and I went, whoa, 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 wait a minute. What are you talking about? Your fake birth certificate. And she said, well, they take the first, the original one that had, had her birth name and our names on it and all the true facts of her, the true accurate facts of her birth. And they seal it with the adoption file. And I said, but over 21, I mean, why, what do you mean you still can't get it? So she showed me her birth certificate, and Lily, it said she was born in a different city. She was born in a different hospital, and that the two, the couple that had adopted her were listed on there as if they had given birth to her. I couldn't believe it. And she said, yeah, she says, and that's still going on. And so I did a little bit of research on my own, and obviously I found out how the records were, closed and sealed, and they didn't care that you had medical issues. And as a result, my daughter, she was having seizures, and I had seizures. My grandmother had seizures, and I had disclosed all her medical history. And what happened is when I met the adoptive mother, I mean, they basically just took my information out of the file and sold her off as a healthy white baby. So as a result of that, her not getting her medical information, and she had applied so many times, calling, trying to get it, she had a stroke. And she's had all types of problems ever since then. She can't keep a job and she can't handle money. And it's just been really heartbreaking. So it angered me to the point to where I was like, this is wrong. I have to change it. What can I do? And I've always been a resourceful. And so I started doing my own research, and I wrote a letter to my state senator about the situation, and she offered to help me. She said, yes, I'm with you. These records need to be opened. And so she said she would help me. And she introduced me to another senator and another individual in Northern Indiana who was also wanting to get the records open. And together we formed an organization and began the lobbying process. And it took us 9 years before that bill finally got passed, restoring records for Hoosier families that were, there was a sandwich law. So ours is from, if you were born from 1941 to 1993, you cannot have your records. But if you were born after 93, you can, which made absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. So we got that changed. So they have access to that.
Oh, wow. In Indiana?
In Indiana. So we thought, yay, you know, that's great. And our families knew the commitment and all the work that we had done that led up 9 years. And they said, so you're done now, right? You're done. And we looked at each other like, no, now it's just really starting, because that was great. We achieved, but it wasn't perfect. The bill wasn't perfect and we still had to do more. But more than that, Lily, what we thought was paramount was we knew that all these Hoosier families may be wanting to go ahead and get their documents and begin a search. Where do they start? They're going to need help. They're going to need support. So we thought the best thing that we could do then would be to start an educational resource that says, we're here for you. We can help you file for these forms. We can show you, you know, when you make the first phone call or you write the letter or whatever it is. We wanted to be that resource to Hoosier families. So we started Indiana Adoptee Network, and we held our first conference in 2017. And so we thought all these Hoosier families would come out, right? And it ended up we had individuals, adoptees, and birth parents come from 22 states and 2 countries.
Wow.
And then we stood there and looked at each other like, okay, what does this tell us? I mean, obviously there's a huge need. I mean, there's a community out there that's really needing connections. And so we just had conferences after that, but we, you know, each year after that, but we just knew that they needed help. So, and we supplied that help and that support. And like, as I shared at the beginning, we outgrew our name because some people thought we were just for Hoosier families exclusively. And we knew we wanted reach to be larger and more extensive. So we changed our name and then went national to the National Association of Adoptees and Parents. Mm-hmm. So what I do is, obviously I'm the host of the Adoption Happy Hour still and co-founder of the organization. We've grown our board and we offer a multitude of support groups to the Adoption Constellation, in addition to our signature program on Friday nights. And again, we're collaborating with Right to Know on another Untangling Our Roots Summit in 2024. And if you go to our website, you'll see recommended books and movies and blogs and adoption competent therapists, which is very, very important because not all therapists are adoption competent. Mm-hmm. And we just try to be that, you know, that platform for anyone in the constellation. We can point them in the right direction. We're not the be all get all. We offer quite a few groups, support groups, but we can't help you. We can send you to another group that can. Yeah. And this is my way of giving back to the community after the heartbreak of finding my daughter and the result of our story, because it was a short honeymoon and it crashed and burned within 8 months. She was gone and he and I eventually got divorced, but we stayed supportive of her daughter and tried to do whatever we could to help her in any way. But now it's just beyond help. I mean, she also has a drug problem and she'll be homeless sometimes and then she'll get an apartment and it's just very sad. So I felt so responsible for so long, and through a good therapist who helped me to understand, you know, exactly what had happened to me, my part, and was accountable for my choices and helping me. I knew I couldn't fix my daughter and I couldn't help her, but I could help others. And so I put all that energy into the organization and helping others, because I can't help my daughter.
I have followed many adoptee pages and sites, and I keep re-seeing the quote, "Adoption is trauma." What do you think when you see that? How do you feel about that?
I agree. It is trauma. It's trauma to the baby that becomes an adult. It's trauma to the mother who loses her baby and never knows what happens to it. Traumatic for the entire family. It's trauma. When a baby is separated from its mother, I mean, trauma is cellular. That's the thing. It's not, you know, initially I think so many people think of trauma as war and or seeing a murder, witnessing a murder and other things. You know, there's different types of trauma. You know, that baby has grown in the womb for 9 months. It knows its mother's voice, her smell. They're one. And even though that baby cannot verbalize the trauma, it's, like I said, it's cellular. It's there. Yeah, I believe that.
What do you think about the adoption industry?
It's so corrupt. It's corrupt just like anything else. Money's at the root of all this. They've lost, you know, it used to be an adoption. It was what's in the best interest of the child. And I'm not throwing a blanket statement out there saying that it's, you know, I mean, there are some good stories out there. There are some adoptees that have gone into good families, good loving families. But we can't skip over that. We have to whittle that down to how that baby came into the family. And like in my case, I mean, I was preyed upon. I was ignorant and I was preyed upon. And I was marketed. Doctors he overreached. And he was allowed to overreach. The laws need reforming, and adoption should be done, if it's going to be done at all, should be done ethically and with transparency and not hiding one's original roots and cutting off all ties to where they don't know who they are. Seriously, needs to be reformed. But, you know, like in Australia, adoptions have all but stopped. I mean, their prime minister went forward with a public apology to mothers for taking their babies in 2013. And numbers, but I know that it's you know, they do very, very, very few adoptions. You can take care of a child and love a child under a guardianship without stripping them of their original birth certificate and their ancestry and all their medical health. There's ways that you can do that if you really want to help a child. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, and family members can help out. We don't live with shame anymore like it was in the 70s with me. And we just need to do what we can to help that mother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if I had had just a little bit more support financially and from my family, I mean, obviously I'm a great mom, mm-hmm. but I would have been a good mom to my daughter, but I was set up from the very beginning to fail. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the adoption industry definitely needs to be revamped. We need to reduce the number of adoptions. We need to reduce them. We need to support families and give them the tools and the resources that they need to stay together. That's not saying that, you know, adoptions should never take place and will stop, because it won't, because there will always be a child in need. But there are also children in foster care that need homes and need to be loved. And we should quit preying on these young women. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I don't believe in adoptive parents in the delivery room. I mean, I know that they want to be a part of that, and I know how special that can be, but that in itself is soft coercion to the young mother that doesn't even know how she's going to feel until she's delivered.
Yeah.
And now you're already put in her mind that she, you know, she already thinks she can't do this. She's giving this amazing gift to this couple. And now by just being there, and if she changes her mind, then maybe she's going to go ahead and say yes, just because she feels bad for the adoptive couple. I don't believe in that at all. And I think there needs to be longer revocation periods. And I know adoptive parents don't like to hear any of those things, but end of the day, that is adoption.
And that's what I learned at the Untangling a Root Summit last year. I mean, I've learned so much since I found out I was an NPE. So many things I misunderstood about adoption. And I did have those beliefs about, oh, an adoptive parent would provide a wonderful life for this child. And I'm embarrassed to admit it, but that's how I used to believe, along with a lot of society. Mm-hmm. At your summit is when I listened to the first mothers on some of the panels and some of the speakers, and they talked about this coercion, this gaslighting, being pregnant, being without resources, nuns, priests, doctors, people would talk them into it. And I just had no idea. I had never heard of like the baby scoop era. I'd never people preying on these mothers and how frightening that is, and not knowing that they could change their mind. Once they said they were considering adoption when they were pregnant, they thought they had to follow through with it when the baby was born.
Thank you. And that brings up a very good point, Lily. I'm glad you shared that. 6 weeks after I delivered, my boyfriend came knocking on the door with this big apology and felt so bad by just abandoning us, and said, you know, he was sorry and he made a mistake. Let's go get our daughter. Now, this is how naive we were. And I said, well, can we do that? And he says, well, people make mistakes, Marcy, all the time. He goes, where's the papers you signed? And I'm like, they didn't give me copies. And that wasn't a mistake, Lily. They did not give us copies that we signed, the relinquishment documents.
Oh, wow.
They did. They just wanted to erase us as if we just never existed at all.
Oh, my
Everything
God.
Was, yeah. So we attempted to get our daughter back. So I went to my doctor's office. First of all, I called and he wouldn't take my calls. And so finally we went in there and they made us sit there for about, I don't know, it was maybe two, 3 hours until they closed. And finally he came out and talked to me, and he was very rude. And, you know, we told him why we were there and what we wanted to do. And he said, well, you sign the papers, it's over with. She's adopted. Oh. Which was a lie, because adoptions aren't finalized for 12 months.
Oh.
So had we been a little wiser, had we had a little bit of money to where we could, you know, we could have gotten her back, possibly. I'm sure we could have, but maybe because of the times we could, I don't know. But the bottom line was, he lied to us.
Yeah.
And he continued to lie to us. And it was just, remember what I said, Marcy, you've given this couple this wonderful gift, and your daughter's never going to want anything, and she's not going to miss you because she's not even going to know you. And I remember going, a gift. Aren't gifts supposed to make you feel good and joyful? And, well, this doesn't feel good at all. This feels like somebody just ripped my heart out and stomped all over it and then gave it back to me and said, have a nice life. There was no rule book when I left the hospital that says, in case you panic from losing your child, read this, call this number. It was just, they booted me out the door and they left me young, naive, and half crazy, because I couldn't even talk about it to my own parents. I had all these feelings and I was hurting and I needed support. And I remember that coming home that week and sitting at the Thanksgiving table, and everybody's talking about, you know, or not the Thanksgiving table, we were talking about Thanksgiving and what was going to be on the menu and who was coming. And I'm looking at them like, I'm sitting there hurting. Why aren't we talking about the elephant in the room? I mean, it's just, it was so obvious to me. And somebody said something and I remember laughing, and I took both of my hands and covered my mouth. Like, I was ashamed. Like, I was betraying my baby. I mean, that's how bad it was. And I remember running upstairs and crying and going, oh my God, how am I going to live with myself? How do I get up in the morning and live with myself? How do I, you know, get back into college and finish college and find it? I mean, how? Nobody would help me. And it was then that moment that I realized that I was by myself and I was going to carry this the rest of my life. So I was either going to destroy me, or I had to learn to manage it. And that's when the whole shoebox was formed. It was just like, knew I had to, in my own little mind, if I could park that pain somewhere, those memories somewhere, not just in my heart, my mind, wanted to physically put it in a box that I could say, it's in here.
Yeah. And
that's how I did it.
That's how you coped. You had to put it in a box.
And then the box reappears in 2007. And that's when the whole story began. You know, it's kind of interesting because when you stop and think about it, I'm here talking to you right now. And all the people that I've met over the last 15 years and adoptees and birth parents and people from all over the world and senators and representatives and everything, all because I rediscovered that cardboard box in my closet. It's pretty profound.
Wow. So was yours called your adoption process, was that called a closed adoption?
It was. Mm-hmm.
Do those still exist to this day?
They do.
They do. Okay. Oh, and what do you think about that?
I'm against it, obviously.
Yeah. Now, this kind of depends on state to state, right? How birth certificates are either sealed or available.
That is correct. Each state has their own law.
Well, now that's exhausting, especially as someone that does advocacy work and lobbying, because we have 50 states. So yes. How many states do you know, how many still need to be changed or how many have open access to the birth certificates?
I could not quote you those accurate numbers at this time.
Yep.
Because I know there's so many that were added on. At the time we were the time that we passed our bill, I think we were the 14th state at that time.
Wow.
But we have a long, long way to go.
Long way to go. That's for sure.
We're not even halfway there. No.
And it sounds like your daughter was never given her accurate medical history.
Correct.
I mean, that just seems not only unethical, but I just, to not give someone their medical history, I don't even understand the reasoning behind that.
Yeah. Again, we weren't supposed to search. They weren't supposed to want to know. They were supposed to go into their families, and the adoptive parents, and of course, in their defense too, were told, just love them and treat them like it was your biological child and everything will be fine.
Yeah. And now we have a world full of adoption certified therapists because we see how that goes.
Right. So interesting enough, though, I will say this, that in 2018, her father and I decided she always wanted to take her name back that she was, you know, that I named her when she was born. So we just, you know, her father came up with this idea. It wasn't me, but he said, why don't we just, you know, go ahead and pay for the attorney to do a name change, because she was all for that. And let's surprise her and ask if we can legally adopt her. And I'm like, what? As an adult? And he said, yeah. So I called my attorney and the attorney said, yeah, we do adult adoptions all the time. So for her birthday, we surprised her and not only told her we were going to help her to restore her name, get her legal name back, we terminated the infant adoption and reinstated her birthright. So now has her full legal name. Yeah.
I didn't know that was possible. So you can do adult adoptions.
Yep.
And you can have the birth certificate change, probably dependent upon your state.
So now she has three birth certificates, her original birth certificate, her OBC, her amended birth certificate, her ABC, and now the restoration of the original one. Mm. How crazy is that?
Yep. And now, Marcy, you have written a book about your journey as well. Will you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. Through all this, I had kept a journal from when I was young. And of course, my story was pretty interesting. And I had already decided that I wanted to write a book. And so I wrote a memoir and it took me about 10 years. And it really actually does need an update. It's called The Shoebox Effect, Transforming Pain into Fortitude and Purpose. But anyway, I wrote it as a memoir. And when I got to editing with my publisher, they looked at it and realized that I had a lot of things, you know, life lessons in it as well. And they helped me to restructure it into almost like, it's like a hybrid. It's like a memoir self-help book. So at the end of each chapter, I ask you a couple of questions. It's, you know, it's designated for the reader. And there's some tips at the end of it. And I ask you some questions that pertain to that particular life lesson. And I'm pretty proud of it, but it does need a little bit of updating. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2019. Anyway, Lily, thank you for letting me share a little bit about my book. I just want to read you this one small passage. I want you to know this. There's magic in your mess. You may have to sit in it for a bit or sift through all the broken pieces of your life, but those dysfunctional shards and your distorted sense of self are actually the makings of a new, stronger, and better you. Whether your pain came from the heartache of a lost love, divorce, a financial mess, regret from poor choices, or anything else, we've all been through something. Life is messy, that's a fact, but that messiness offers you opportunities to regroup and stand in your sacred place. Denial is a mask the wounded wear. For me, once I shed the role of a consummate actress and stepped into my truth, all of it, I was finally able to shed the emotional shackles that kept me a prisoner for decades. I finally found my clarity and purpose. God doesn't promise us a Hallmark ending, but He does promise us He will never leave us during our darkest hours. Rethinking the Shoebox Effect saved my life. And it can save yours too. If you are hurting and lost, grieving for the lost places of your past, know that there is a way back to joy. You know what you really want. Now lift that lid off and clean out your shoebox. The freedom you hunger for is hiding in plain sight. It's called the truth.
Thank you so much for reading that.
You're welcome.
I will link that book and let's see here. Will you say it again? Shoebox Effect?
A Shoebox Effect. It's on Amazon. Transforming Pain into Fortitude and Purpose.
And I will link NAP as well. And the National Association of Adoptees and Parents is a great resource. You want to talk at all about your upcoming summit that you have, probably what, 6-8 months away, something like that?
Yeah, that's being handled. Yeah, I'm not on the committee for that. Really can't go into any specifics, but we're just now requesting proposals. But yeah, that is in Denver, Colorado, in April of 2024. So yeah, we'll be sharing more about that on Happy Hour as well.
Wonderful. So just to keep in people's minds, April 2024, there will be a summit for the adoptees and MPE community in Denver, mm-hmm. Colorado. Wonderful.
That's correct.
Okay, Marcy, this has been so wonderful. If people wanted to get in touch with you or know more about your organizations or your books, what is the best place for them to reach you?
I have two email addresses. You can email me at Marcy, M-A-R-C-I-E, at napunited.org. Or me personally, it's my full name, MarcyJKeithley at gmail.com.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, Marcy, it was so nice to talk to you again today. I always love connecting with you. You are just, you're such an easy person to talk to ever since I met you in person at the summit. And thank you so much for coming on today and sharing about this and giving us some education and sharing your story.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You're quite welcome, Lily. I really enjoyed it.
These stories are here for us to identify with. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, email npestories@gmail.com. You do not have to give any identifying information. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, I'd like to hear from you. Subscribe to this podcast to hear more. Come heal with us.